I'm curious to know how many people in this room right now are familiar with that iconic image of Charlton Heston holding the two tablets of the Ten Commandments. How many of you have seen that movie? Cecil B. DeMille, right? You know, this classic, iconic movie. If you haven't seen it, you're missing out on what had been a bit of a defining moment of North American culture, as this movie was portraying the release of the Israelites from Egypt and, of course, the giving of the law on Mount Sinai, a key point in the history of Israel and part of the background of our faith. I've often wondered, though, how likely it is that such a movie could be made again today, simply because the idea of the Ten Commandments doesn't quite have the same reach it once did. I mean, how many people in our society even know of them? There might be up to half of the population of Canada has no idea of the Ten Commandments at all. So I do wonder if that movie could ever be made. But of course, having said that, we are familiar with the concept of the Ten Commandments. We know about the Ten Commandments. But it's one thing to know about something, and another thing to know the thing itself. So here's the operative question. You know about the Ten Commandments. Do you actually know the Ten Commandments? Would you be able to articulate all ten of them? Would you be able to articulate them in order? If I asked you to give me commandment number 8, could you say, "Thou shalt not steal"? If you're feeling kind of nervous and sweaty right now, I'm not going to quiz you. But let me help you so that I can quiz you afterwards. I want to show you how you can remember the Ten Commandments very, very easily. What you have to do is take your two hands, because you've got 10 digits on those two hands. You have them facing you with your palms inward. And because the Ten Commandments appear in Exodus chapter 20 and then in Deuteronomy chapter 5, which is the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, it's written in Hebrew. And in Hebrew, you read from right to left. So we have to start with the right hand, okay? So you take your right thumb. And what you can do with your right thumb is you can hold it up and block out the sun. You can put it between your eyes and the sun and block it out. The first commandment is, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." You don't want to have any other gods between you and God. Nothing between you and God at all. So that first thumb tells you nothing between you and God. No other gods, right? The index finger on your right hand forms the letter I. The letter I stands for idol or graven image. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Don't make any idols. Don't bow down and worship any things that you've created. We don't do that. So that's the second commandment right there. The next finger is a rather well-known symbol of profanity. And this reminds us that thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, right? Don't make God's name become a swear word, right? So there's the reminder there. Commandment number 3, do not misuse the name of God. The fourth commandment, this finger is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 from the end. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. The seventh day is the Sabbath day. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That's commandment number 4. Now, commandment number 5, we've got our baby finger here. And of course, a baby always wants to grow up to be like his mom and dad, right? This commandment is honor your father and mother. Okay, so you think of the baby wanting to grow up to be like mom and dad. Honor your father and mother. That's commandment number 5. Moving over to your left hand, commandment number 6, the pinky finger there forms the leading edge of a karate chop. Hi-ya! Thou shalt not kill, right? Actually, do not murder is what it actually is. Thou shalt not murder. So that's what commandment number 6 is. The next one is your ring finger. And so this one's an easy reminder. Your wedding band is there. Do not commit adultery, right? So that's a really easy one to remember. You always look at your ring finger. There it is. Do not commit adultery. Now, the middle finger on your left hand works in conjunction with your thumb. And with that, you can go ahead and surreptitiously slip something that at one time belonged to somebody else. You can go up and take something out of their pockets, whatever the precious is, right? So do not steal is commandment number 8. Do not steal. Commandment number 9 is the index finger on your left hand. This one's really fun. You have to point at somebody, but you've got to kind of wag that. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Don't lie. I'm telling you. So that's the 9th commandment. And your thumb, now allows you to form a C, which represents the word covet. Thou shalt not covet. Don't covet anything that belongs to somebody else. Do not be so desiring of something that isn't yours and can't be yours. You're not allowed to do that. Do not covet. So there's the Ten Commandments. We're going to review it one more time, and you will pretty much have it nailed because it works so well. We have our hands up. Commandment number one, you shall have no other gods before me. Commandment number two, the letter I, no idols, no graven images. Commandment number three, do not misuse my name. Commandment number four, I mean, some people have a moral problem with actually lifting that finger, I know, anyway. Commandment number four, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 from the end. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Number five, honor your father and mother. Commandment number six, thou shalt not murder. Commandment number seven, do not commit adultery. Commandment number eight, thou shalt not steal. Commandment number nine, don't lie, don't bear false witness. And commandment number 10, thou shalt not covet. So there you go. Review that today. Now, give yourselves a hand because you're the ones who'll be able to remember it now. And if someone says, can you tell me what commandment number seven is? You can go, yes, I can. So there it is. Now this is all well and good. But sometimes the question comes, why should we even bother with the Ten Commandments? Why is that a deal? Especially in today's day and age, right? I understand that in the States, there's often some consternation and conflict about the idea as to whether or not the Ten Commandments ought to be displayed in courtrooms, for example. The suggestion being that America really isn't a Christian nation. Why should we have this Christian thing? But when you think about it, the Ten Commandments are a summary of the Torah, which means it's an ancient Israelite thing. It's a Jewish thing. So why are the Ten Commandments held at all in high esteem? Why do we even pay attention to them? Is there any good reason why you ought to know them? Well, that's a very good question. I was going to say this, though, as to why it's important to know them, is because Jesus makes reference to them in a way that helps us understand. He was asked, which of the commandments is the greatest? Now, there are 613 commandments in the Torah. At least that's what Jewish rabbis tell us. The Ten Commandments that were given on Mount Sinai in Exodus 20 are a summary of those 613. And when Jesus was asked, which is the greatest commandment, he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Those two commands, he says, on these two commands hang all the law and the prophets. And so what we often accurately say is those are the two commandments we have to pay closest attention to. If we are loving God and loving neighbor, well, then we're fulfilling the whole of the law. That's all we need to do, right? Especially in light of the fact that later in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul will take great effort to make sure that people who aren't Jewish don't have to be subjected to Jewish laws if they want to be Christians. But here's the interesting thing. If we say, love God, love your neighbor, doesn't that inevitably ask us the question, how? How do we show that we love God? How do we show that we love our neighbor? Well, guess what? The Ten Commandments are a very useful summary of that. You see, the first four commands, no other gods before me, no idols, don't misuse my name, and remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, all have to do with our relationship with God. And following those four commandments assist us with loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. The other six commandments, from honor your father and mother through don't steal to don't covet, actually talk about our relationship with other people. It's a way to help us answer the question, how do I love my neighbor? These Ten Commandments, especially the last six, actually have a rather universal appeal to them. In fact, it doesn't matter what religion you're of, or even if a person is an atheist, they're going to agree, you know what, you ought to honor your parents. You shouldn't steal from other people. Don't cheat on your spouse. You ought not to kill people, for sure, no murdering, right? These are things that are held by so many. And so it has application. The first four certainly have a little bit more of a uniqueness to them. If we think of God in a generic way, it's not too hard to see that a person of any religion would say you ought not to misuse the name of the God that you worship or whatever, right? It's something that does have a transcendent approach in terms of how we ought to live. There's value in it. But having said all of that, having listed all these rules, there is one commandment that is probably the one that's more problematic for anybody. And that is commandment number 4, which is, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Very good. That one is the one that might seem to be the least applicable nowadays. After all, the Sabbath day was a Jewish observance. The Sabbath day, the seventh day of the week, is a Saturday. And so Jews gather together and they have that day being put aside for them. Christians, when Jesus rose from the dead, decided to move the Sabbath day to Sunday instead because it was on the first day of the week that Jesus had risen from the dead. And so the Christians moved that Sabbath day, if you want to call it that now, to Sunday instead. So now it's the first day of the week for Christians. But what about other people? Is the Sabbath day to be observed by people who aren't Jews or aren't Christians? Does the Sabbath day command have any value for people nowadays, especially in this global economy that runs 24/7, 365? Like, is that something that is realistic? Why would there be any notion that the Sabbath day ought to be paid attention to at all nowadays? Well, our gospel reading gave us 2 episodes in Jesus' life that had specifically to do with the Sabbath day. Here, Jesus once again encounters the Pharisees, the ones who always gave him the hardest time. And what we heard were these 2 stories. At one time, Jesus and his disciples were walking through grain fields, and the disciples started plucking heads of grain from the fields as they went by. This is not stealing, by the way, because Jewish law required that people who own grain fields keep the edges and the corners of the grain field intact so that people who are transient, people who are poor, widows, orphans, and so on, could just go ahead and grab some grain and they'd be able to still live. So this is exactly okay. This is not a problem. The picking of the grain itself isn't the issue. But because it was a Sabbath day, and because in doing that, the disciples would have picked the grain, rubbed it between their hands to get rid of the chaff, and then popped the grains like popcorn, they've effectively been harvesting. And harvesting is work, and the commandment of God is that thou shalt do no work on the Sabbath. The Pharisees said to Jesus, "Why are your disciples doing what isn't lawful on the Sabbath? You're violating God's law. You're breaking God's law." Then the next episode, Jesus is in the synagogue on a Sabbath day, and there happens to be there a man with a withered hand. He's paralyzed or something. Something's wrong with his hand. And the Pharisees see that guy and they're saying, "You know what? Jesus has been doing this healing thing and all of that. We should see whether or not he's going to heal this guy. It's the Sabbath, after all, and healing is something physicians do, and that's work. You're not supposed to work on the Sabbath." So I'm just thinking, watch this. I bet you he'll heal that guy. Then we've got him. Jesus knows their thoughts and is really ticked off and upset about them. He brings the man up and says, "Stretch forth your hand." He stretches forth his hand, and it's healed. And the Pharisees go, "We knew it. We knew he was going to do that. Let's kill him." And of course, this episode blows my mind. It's like, his hand was like this, and then suddenly it's not. And you can't see that. You can't get the miracle that you've just seen. Instead, you're hung up about the Sabbath law. This is one of the questions that people ask about some of the rules that are found in not only the Ten Commandments, but in other aspects of our faith and other aspects of society. Why would you even want to have a law that somebody can get so hung up on it that they make it something so burdensome for other people? What's the point of that? God's command, don't work. If you work, there's a problem. Well, it's important for us to understand the background of what's going on with this command. It's important for us to understand what the Pharisees were up to. Let's just talk about them for a moment first. I can honestly say that the Pharisees meant well. And what I mean is this, and I think I've talked about this before, but just by way of review, after Israel had spent at least 70 years in exile, they knew from the prophets that the reason they went into exile is because they violated God's law. And so the Pharisees as a group emerged after they had returned from exile and about a couple hundred years before Jesus came. And so for 2 centuries, there were these people who were highly motivated to do whatever they could to make sure the people of Israel would not violate God's law again. Because if they violate God's law, they're going to be exiled again. So when they come to the 4th commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, do not do any work, it becomes very logical that you have to think, all right then, how do you define work? What constitutes work? How do we make sure that people know what work is so they don't do it on the Sabbath and thereby violate the commandment? And, you know, does anybody read the end user license agreement you install a new piece of software on your computer? You know, that 13 pages of what? Yeah, nobody does. But it's there because the way legalese works is you keep trying to define everything, cover over every possible loophole so nobody goes and violates something and you got it all covered. And of course, this is exactly what the Pharisees are ultimately doing in their attempt to protect people from violating the law. But as a result, it became burdensome. They became more about people holding the law than understanding what the law was for. And this is what Jesus had to say. And what he said here is part of what makes this law applicable for all of us. He said, look it, the Sabbath was made for humankind. It wasn't that humankind was made for the Sabbath. By saying humankind, by the way, Jesus immediately takes the observance of this law beyond merely the people of Israel. It's about more than just Jews. It's more than just Judaism. He says human beings are to benefit from the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for humans, not humans for the command about the Sabbath. In other words, Jesus is saying the last thing you have to understand this to be is some law, some rule God wants you to follow just because he wants you to follow it. This is for your benefit. When the Israelites left slavery in Egypt, they made their way miraculously across the Red Sea and then traveled for a couple of weeks, came to Mount Sinai. Moses goes up on there, gets the Ten Commandments, the rest of the law, brings it down to the people. And when the fourth commandment is read to them, they are told, the reason why you need to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy is because in the creation story, God spent 6 days creating the world and then he rested on the seventh day. So in the same way that God did that, you, being the people of God, ought to reflect that. So here Israel, for 400 years, living in the milieu of Egyptian polytheism, are now introduced to what their God is like. And so you want to be like me? God is saying this is how you ought to live. This is the principle. Here's how you ought to do it. The Israelites end up going to the promised land, but because of their disobedience and failure to trust God, that's an important piece here, their failure to trust God, God says, you need to trust me. You didn't. It was clear. You got to wander around for 40 years in the wilderness. And 40 years later, now they're ready to enter the promised land again, so they revisit the Ten Commandments. And this time, in Deuteronomy chapter 5, when they read the fourth commandment, the commandment says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Do no work on that day. Why? Because remember that you were slaves in Egypt, but you're not slaves anymore. This reminder, as they go into the promised land, getting ready to set up shop, to establish themselves as this nation, this land, to do all the work involved in nation building, if you will, before they go in, God says, you're not slaves anymore. When you were literally working for slave drivers, you were working 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's not what I want you to do, because you're not slaves. So I only want you to work 6 days. Take a day off every week. Carve out that time. This is for your benefit. This is a blessing. This is something I am granting to you. It is a day of rest that you do not have to try to be eking out a living and slaving away to make it happen. What God is saying by making it a command is this: you need to trust me for that day off. You need to trust me that I am going to honor the fact that you're taking that day. This was actually demonstrated in the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness because God was taking care of God's people. God would feed them. And so he'd send this weird bread that would show up on the ground. People didn't know what it was, so they called it manna, which means, what is it? That's what they called it, this weird bread. Every morning, the bread was there. Every night, quails would come, and they would collect meat. And all they had to do was collect enough of that for the day, and they'd be fed for the day. But none of it would appear on the Sabbath day, on Saturday. And so they didn't have to gather food. Instead, and you do have to plan for your Sabbath, you have to put some things in place, they had to gather twice as much of the weird bread on Friday and twice as much of the quail on Friday, so that they didn't have to gather any on the Saturday and they could relax. They didn't have to worry. God's provision was granted to them and they could punch out. They could unplug. They could enjoy a day of rest. They could find themselves being able to relax. to recreate, to be restored. I'm convinced that if we were to follow this Sabbath principle today, we would find a lot fewer stress-related issues in those who are still working for a living. We would find a lot fewer issues of mental and emotional and psychological wellness. We would find people able to unplug and get away from the stresses of work and actually find themselves refreshed to get back at it when the week starts again. Now, whether it's a literal 24-hour period of time or not, look, I don't want to start adding legalese to the whole idea. But if the Sabbath was made for humankind, if the Sabbath command was something that was granted to us by God as a gift, I would suggest we ought to trust God and embrace that gift that God has offered. And be willing to trust that even in our seven-day-a-week society, saying, you know what, I'm going to punch out that time and I'm going to trust that things are going to work out okay. Or that maybe I will trust that I will be able to hire staff to cover off that seventh day so I can take a break and have them work instead. All of these things, I'm convinced, are ways to demonstrate that we trust that God has our best purposes in mind. In fact, as we prayed in the Collect prayer this morning, and as you hear about in the New Testament, there are many references to the promise of the hope that we have of the life that follows this one. There are many references to it being the Sabbath rest of God. That what we get to look forward to when this life is over is that time of being able to rest in the presence of God, no longer having to eke out a living, no longer having to slave away, but being at peace and refreshed. If this is the promise God is holding out to us, I would suggest that we ought to consider how to fulfill commandment number 4, to understand that it is for our benefit, and start to work out, how do I implement this in my life? As we endeavor to do that discipline, I'm convinced God will bless us in that effort and will encourage us day by day as we take that time to unplug and unwind, just as God intended that we do. Amen.